You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, one of the things I like to do from time to time, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the third hour, by the way. If I see a particularly excellent video out there, every now and then, and I did this a couple of weeks ago with Lana Lochtiff and the 84 Lumber commentary she did. If I see a really good video out there, I like to take it and air it on the show to give it a wider audience. And there was just such a video a couple of days ago that came to my attention. Jared Taylor refuted the argument with pinpoint accuracy that whites don't have a right to the United States because they took the land from the Indians. Now, in this video, which you're about to hear, he points out that the Indians, of course, first slaughtered each other over the land long before whites arrived, but no one says that they don't have a right to defend the territory just because they took it from someone else. In other words, all of the Indians that we conquered were on land that they had taken from someone before we ever even arrived. So all around the world, though, people live on land that they took from others. But so long as they're not white, no one says they have no right to that land. But when it's whites, of course, the tables are turned, and it's a whole different story. Well, I went back to school earlier this week at Northwestern. You're going to go back to school now, and you're going to learn a lesson worth hearing. Here it is.
Hello, I'm Jared Taylor with American Renaissance. If you ever get into a debate about immigration and say you want whites to remain a majority in the United States, someone will tell you that white people don't really have a right to America because we took it from the Indians. Let me explain just how stupid this argument is. First of all, does anyone think the Indians didn't take land away from each other or simply exterminate each other? There's a place in South Dakota called Crow Creek where archaeologists found the scalped, horribly mutilated bodies of 486 men, old women, and children. There were hardly any bodies of young women because they were taken as sex slaves. The entire settlement was wiped out in what archaeologists think was a fight over arable land. When did this happen? In the mid-1300s, long before Columbus. When white people showed up, they found that Indian tribes were battling each other constantly. The French explorer Pierre La Vérendrye was one of the first Europeans to learn about the Assiniboine Cree and the Sioux. In 1743, he reported that, quote, from time immemorial, they have been deadly enemies. A French priest wrote about a battle in 1742 in which the Assiniboine Cree killed or captured 270 Sioux. That would have been the population of an entire village. At about the same time, the Crow Indians drove the original Indian settlers out of the Yellowstone Valley. It's a pleasant place, as you can see. And they found themselves surrounded by hostile tribes. As the years went by, they would very likely have been exterminated, except that they had an alliance with, guess who? It was the U.S. Cavalry who protected them from their enemies. The Muscogee and the Choctaw had a land dispute and in 1790 slaughtered nearly 500 of each other in a single battle. Also in the 18th century, the Blackfoot tribe took the land of the Kootenai and the Flathead Indians and part of the Shoshone lands at the foot of the Rockies. In arid parts of the Southwest, the Hopi and the Zuni fought each other over arable land. As for the Comanche, after they got horses, they drove the Osage, the Cheyenne, and the Arapaho out of their hunting grounds. During the Civil War, the Comanche pushed white settlers in Texas 100 miles back to the east. They raided as far as 400 miles into Mexico, where they took thousands of slaves. Parts of northern Mexico were almost completely depopulated because of Comanche raids. But let's get back to the Sioux. They called themselves Lakota, which means allies. Other tribes called them Sioux, a name the Ojibwa first gave them, which means snakes or enemies. They were originally from the Great Lakes, but were pushed west by the Ojibwa and the Cree. Over a period of 200 years, they fought at least 28 different tribes and drove the following people off their land: the Pawnee, the Ponca, the Arikara, Iowa, Mandan, Hidatsa, Assiniboine, and the Crow. The Sioux lands are recognized in an 1868 treaty with the U.S. government, which you can see in yellow, were all taken from other tribes who were there first. The biggest battles the Lakota Sioux fought against the U.S. cavalry, including the Battle of Little Bighorn, were over land that originally belonged to other Indians. Further west, in Montana, in 1866, the Piegan Indians killed more than 300 of their enemies, the Crow and the Gros Ventres, in just a single battle. This is more than the highest estimated casualty counts for Indians in any engagement with the U.S. Army. Did you know that after contact with whites in the 19th century, more Indians in the West died fighting each other than died fighting whites? I sure didn't until I started looking into this. So yes, we took the land from the Indians, and they fought like hell to keep it. But no one ever says the Indians didn't have the right to defend their land just because they took it from somebody else. No one says that. All around the world, people are living on land they took from other people. Does that mean they don't have rights to it? All of North Africa, for example, was conquered by the Arabs, who forced the locals to convert to Islam or die. Does that mean Morocco, for example, isn't allowed to have an immigration policy because the people living there now took the land from somebody else? European history is an endless story of conquest. Before the First World War, Hungary was three times bigger than it is today. It was officially carved up in 1920. So does that mean that the Slovaks, the Romanians, and the Croatians who helped themselves to huge chunks of Hungary can't have an immigration policy? And who's this guy? He's Augusto Peña Nieto, the president of Mexico. Take a good look. Does he look like this guy, for example? This is a real native Mexican. Here are more indigenous Mexicans. And here is the current Mexican cabinet. They don't look like native Mexicans either, do they? The guy who looks the most like a native Mexican is the one in the upper left-hand corner, Miguel Chong. And the only reason he looks like an Aztec is because he's half Chinese. And here's President Peña Nieto with his wife, Angelica. Maybe I just can't see straight, but she doesn't look much like this lady, who is a Mexican Indian, or these ladies, who are also indigenous. Could it possibly be that Mexico's rulers took Mexico from the Indians too? Oh, no, no, no. That would mean they couldn't have an immigration policy. But just see what happens to you if you try to immigrate illegally into Mexico. So you see, this idea that history disqualifies white Americans from deciding who lives here is baloney. It's an argument people use only against whites. It's just one more double standard intended to browbeat whites into thinking they have no right to survive as a people. Don't fall for it. But do subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks very much for listening.
That's Jared Taylor, of course, American Renaissance. Hey, when's the last time do you think a lesson like that was taught in history class at any of the federal schools, Keith? Quick answer from you, and we'll talk a little more about it on the flip side.
The 1950s.
All right. Yeah, they don't teach it like that anymore in the federal schools, that's for sure. That's real history, though, and that's why. But you'll learn about Martin Luther King, I can tell you that. Not the real history on him, though. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
This is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and I want to introduce you to Numana Storable Foods. This is the first brand of storable foods that I am willing to put my name behind. It's food you can trust. No GMOs, no MSG, no chemical preservatives, and no fake meat. Plus, Numana doesn't just make that claim. They back it up with independent evaluation and testing. Another thing that Numana really does that excites me is the delicious vegetarian options. If your standards are as high as mine, I can confidently tell you that Numana Storable Foods are the quality choice that you've been waiting for. Numana won't just meet your expectations, they will exceed them. And that's why we're thrilled to have the good guys from Numana joining the Power Hour family. Go to powerprepper.com and learn about Numana Storable Foods. You can also call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Numana, the storable food you'll love to eat.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
Well, we've talked about this before. I thought Jared really went a little more in depth than perhaps even we have, but we've talked about how to respond to this absurdity,
false narrative.
America can't be ours because we quote unquote took it from the Indians. Well, first of all, let me just say this. I'm glad. I said it. I'm glad. If we came here and we had to fight against the Indians, and the Indians certainly fought against us, and there wasn't one unified Indian civilization, there was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of quarreling tribes of squatters basically fighting each other for land and resources and genociding one another long before we got here. And if once we got here, there had to be an engagement, I'm glad we won. And I own it. Everything that has happened in the history of our people, I own. I don't regret any of it. I might not have done it the same way. We might have done it differently. All of it. You put everything good that whites have done, particularly whites from Northern Europe, our people from the windswept isles of the British Isles and Scotland and England. And
Scandinavia.
Our people that settled the South. You put everything good we've done for the world and then the quote-unquote bad stuff. I'll take it all. Because we've done nothing that other people haven't done as well, including slavery, which still exists, by the way. But we won't talk about that because there's no whites still engaging in it to shake down. But all of this stuff at the Indians, I own it all. I'm proud we won. I'm glad we won. I'm glad that we did with America what we did with it. And this was God's gift to his people.
Well, if you want two sources to look up for more details about this, one is the article we ran and run every Columbus Day, The Importance of Columbus Day. It tells you that America basically was a big wildlife reserve run by a sparse number of indigenous people, the so-called Indians, who were basically stuck in the New Stone Age. And they were not early environmentalists or peace lovers or peaceniks. They were ignoble savages, as Jared Taylor says in another article. Type that. Go to the Amran site, type in your Google box, ignoble savages, and read what the Indians were really like before the advent of the white men. White people coming to a nation or to any area, it's like the swallows coming to Capistrano. We are the harbingers of springtime, growth, good times, easy living coming. That's why people from all over the world are striving to transport themselves, often at the danger of killing themselves, so they can reach white nations and they can live in societies that were created by white people, because they are the best societies in the world. People recognize that. That's why they come. And we, rather than apologizing for ourselves, we need to acknowledge the fact that white societies are the most desirable societies in the world, and the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Look at all the immigrants that are striving to get here into the United States, into Europe, into Australia. They're not striving like that to get into China or Saudi Arabia or Dubai or any, or Korea or Japan, any of these other non-white nations, even non-white first world nations.
Well, I want to wrap up one thing with this. That was excellently stated, Keith, as always, as everything you say is. I want to get into the other thing you brought, but to wrap up the thing about the Indians, again, reinforce the position that we've taken, the position that Jared just put forth, by contrasting what the white Christians did with the Indians compared to what the Indians did when they conquered another people. As you were talking about during the break, Keith, there's no mound builders left. There were mound builders in the South and in the Southeast. The Cherokees and Creeks and Chickasaw simply exterminated them. The Indians didn't create reservations or casinos for the other tribes that they conquered to enable them to survive and maintain their languages and religions and so on.
Put them on welfare.
They just genocided them and took their women as slaves. Only white Christians did the other. And since all the Indian tribes in existence conquered and exterminated some other people, if we are to blame people like our ancestors for conquering the Indians, then the clock shouldn't start when we arrived, but it should start earlier on. And if you start the clock then the racist, genocidal, xenophobic Cherokees got what they deserved when our ancestors came ashore. So there's just some food for thought for that old canard. This is something you hear time and time again, and so we're trying to equip you with the intellectual ammunition to handle it. We took the land from the Indians. Yeah, we did take it, and I'm glad we did. It's worked out good for me.
And quite frankly, the Indians are better off for it.
But honestly, they are. They are. Let's be honest. Their descendants are better off for it, and that's just the history of the world, and that's the way the world works. And you can't compare exhibits out of history. You can't compare moments and times out of history.
And trying to judge historical figures by modern standards is always a mistake.
All right. What'd you bring in, Keith? You got something for us.
Well, again, I am agog at the fact that basically all of our societal institutions have been taken over by the left and co-opted for the left. Now, I have a magazine here called The Bencher, the March-April 2017 edition. This is a magazine of a group called the American Ends of Court. The American Ends of Court prides itself as developing collegiality between excellent lawyers on one hand and excellent judges on the other, and basically promoting standards of excellence in courtroom behavior by judges and by lawyers. In other words, the highest standards of professionalism, of intellectualism, and whatnot are promoted supposedly by this organization, or at least they were when it was founded. But lo and behold, I'm looking at this magazine right now, and it's got pictures of a bunch of different people, men, women, blacks, whites, Hispanics, Orientals, and whatnot. And the title of this issue of The Bencher is Diversity Matters. And you go through this magazine, and here are some of the articles on it. Let me just, give you a sampling or a taste of the treasures that are here. One is Diversity and Inclusion Matter. Why and how, okay? And then the lack of diversity in alternative dispute resolution and the current beneath. In other words, they found something they can't infect with this current mania for diversity. And of course, there are dark forces at work preventing this salutary change from happening. Here's another one. Ethical prohibitions against discrimination promote diversity in our profession. Next one, diversifying the socioeconomic dynamics of the bench. That's judges for the uninitiated. Now, why is this happening? This is happening because liberalism conquers all. What the Bencher's current edition shows is that they have the American ends of court have totally abandoned their original raison d'etre, their reason for existence, which was to promote excellence. Now, excellent be damned. Let's throw that out the window. Diversity is much more important than excellence on the bench. Therefore, we achieve diversity how? Through affirmative action. What is affirmative action? Racial discrimination against whites, and in particular white males. We don't want too many white males because if we don't promote diversity, if we just rely on merit and native ability and intelligence, oh, then we're liable to get a bar and a bench that is predominantly white. Well, that would never do, so we've got to drop the standards, and of course, dropping the standards gets us all the benefits of diversity. Remember, we've been taught the mantra, diversity is our greatest strength. It's obviously our greatest weakness, or else they wouldn't have to be selling it quite so hard, James.
Well, Flo and Eddie want us to take a break. We're going to be back right after this, and more from Keith Alexander the Great and yours truly here at the Political Cesspool comes around the home stretch for tonight's live broadcast.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg. Colorado Springs resident Brad Pittman was never convicted of, charged with, or arrested for a criminal offense, yet he suffered one of the worst imaginable punishments a parent can experience when an El Paso County family court judge terminated his parental rights on the recommendation of the Department of Human Services. This happened after a stranger broke into a home occupied by his ex-wife and sexually assaulted Pittman's 4-year-old daughter. Police who investigated the assault over 20 years ago obtained a statement from the victim that the assailant was a stranger. Asked in a videotaped interview if her dad had attacked her, the child replied that she had never seen the person before, but he was dark like her dad. Fingerprints and a palm print found on the windowsill used to gain access to the victim's bedroom did not match the father. However, after being manipulated for several months by social workers, the child gave another videotaped interview in which she said that her dad had hurt her. Without obtaining an indictment or a conviction, social workers issued an order demanding that he take responsibility for the sexual physical abuse of his daughter, and that he participate in a psychological and or sex offender evaluation. When Pittman asserted his innocence, the Department of Human Services filed a motion to terminate parental rights, which was granted. Last October, the fingerprint obtained from the kitchen window screen was used to convict a man named Joel Market of several sex crimes committed in the same jurisdiction decades ago. Like Pittman, Market is a black man.
For the news the networks refuse to use, turn to LibertyNewsDaily.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Ba, 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 ba.
welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, Keith and I were just talking during the last commercial break that we're 2 segments away from the end of this show, and for the first time probably in 2 years, I don't think we've mentioned Donald Trump yet. I may have mentioned him in the first hour because I received a question about him from the students at Northwestern, but it really wasn't about Trump. It was just, or rather that segment wasn't about Trump. It was just, it was more about my appearance there and rather than something specifically he had done. Anyway, so we were talking to Keith. I was like, well, Keith, we got to do something. What's the latest going on with Trump? What's the big news? We haven't really covered any current events really this hour. I mean, stick man, I guess you could say is a current event, and everything's certainly been important and timely, but we have just a few minutes remaining. So I guess the big news out of D.C. this week is the debate over health care.
And the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare.
Now, we like that, but what Ryan put up there
is a disaster and is appropriately being...
Tell us why.
Being resisted by true conservatives. And the reason is this. First of all, what was the Affordable Care Act? What was its purpose? Let me distill it for you in the simplest terms possible. Before the Affordable Care Act, old people got free health care. It's called Medicare. You got it once you were past 65 because you'd been paying into government programs to support the rest of the nation. Went all through your youth, through your middle age and early aged portion of your lifespan. So the reward was to get free health care when you got older. I remember that's what I was looking forward to. And then, lo and behold, you have Obamacare, which basically took the free health care away from the aged part of the population and gave it to the young, particularly children. Why was this done? Well, does it have anything to do with race? Well, of course it does. It always has something to do with race. Race is the hidden subtext between 90% of the things our government does. And they decided to take it from the old part of the population because guess what? What are most of the old people? They're white. Now, with declining white birth rates, what are the young people that have had the health care diverted to them for their advantage? They're non-white. That's why the Obama administration, the Democrats, bothered to pass Obamacare in the first place. Now, you have seen with the Ryan proposal for repeal and reform the fact that the left has permanently moved the needle towards the left and towards welfare. Ryan and his conservative buddies won't have a repeal that does not allow health care to be provided free of charge to the poor, i.e. the non-white part of the population. Because that would just be a disaster public relations-wise for the Republican Party, so they think. However, we can't afford it. Basically, non-white need is a bottomless pit, and medical care is way outpriced in the United States of America. We have the highest cost health care and pharmaceuticals in the world. We have a full 20% of our gross national product tied up in health care. That's more than double what any other nation has. So consequently, without ratcheting down health care costs, there's no way that we're going to be able to afford this. But Ryan, being the little closeted liberal that he is, wants that done. Rand Paul, to his credit, is opposing.
Yeah, we talked about this at lunch this week. So, of course, Rand Paul cucked on an almost historical level during his ill-fated campaign for the presidency in 2016.
No person could be. You'd have to think that he was Lyndon Baines Johnson the way he was carrying on for black people.
It was world-class cucking, but the Rand Paul we see now is the Rand Paul that we refer to as useful Rand Paul. the pause, when properly channeled, especially Ron was certainly a little more stout than Rand, but even Rand, little Rand, when properly adjusted, it can be an asset. And I do like his constitutional stands on the issues. And so useful Rand Paul in this manifestation is a guy that's coming out and speaking truth to power about the Republican plan for health care, which is basically just a watered-down version of Obamacare, as best that I've been able to.
Yeah, it's basically providing all the welfare portion of
that
Obamacare.
Should be the that should have been the first thing that they got rid of. The first thing.
Right. See, we had it all figured out down here in the South and in Memphis before. When I was a child, you had health care for poor people. It was called John Gaston Hospital. It provided bare bones health care for those who could not otherwise afford it. For example, if a black kid broke his leg, then we're not going to let it heal without being set so that he was a cripple the rest of his life. They would take him down to John Gaston Hospital, have the leg set as best they could, and you know, then he could, you know, go through life not crippled, but walking like a normal, healthy person. That's what you had back in the old days. Now, they weren't going to... Now, in Memphis, the Charity Hospital is the only level one trauma center in the vicinity.
Yeah, so, that's crazy.
So, consequently, the poorest people get the most expensive medical
care.
Well,
and this is another thing. And because we're flooded with so many illegals, it take you 2 weeks to get seen there. And here's another thing. One of my Twitter followers, by the way, if you're not following the Political Cesspool on Twitter, it's at James Edwards TPC. James Edwards TPC is my Twitter handle, but somebody made a good point. We were talking about the Indians earlier. The Indians were, what happened to them happened because they didn't unite and fight as a united force. Ironically now, whites are not uniting, and we're being overrun by the third world illegals. And yeah, if you go to the Med now, which as it's known in Memphis, the Med, that's the free hospital. It's one of the best, but...
It's 10 times as expensive for basic care. For example, if you're involved in an automobile accident and the constabulary figures out that you've got insurance, they'll send you to Methodist Hospital, St. Francis, or Baptist, where your emergency room bill, if you say my neck and back hurts, will be anywhere from $500 to $800. If you go to the Med, if you have no insurance
card.
No,
that's if, Keith, if they don't even do anything for you. My wife was opening a cabinet. The cabinet fell out, hit her right in the middle of the forehead. Yeah. So we took her into the emergency room. It was a Sunday afternoon. All of the primary care physicians were closed. Even the minor medical centers were closed. We took her in. This was back in January. We took her into the emergency room on a Sunday afternoon. And they looked at her, didn't touch her. Didn't do an x-ray, didn't do a CAT scan, didn't do stitches, didn't do the adhesive glue. They said, it looks okay. Go home. We got a bill. I mean, literally walked back there, you know, did the paperwork, walked back there. Doctor looked at her, put on the gloves, touched it, and said, yeah, I think it's fine. It's already starting to heal. Got a bill for like $1,200.
See, this is the inflation in medical care that we were talking about in the earlier segment that has to be conquered for any type of health care plan like a Medicare or an Obamacare or whatever you want to call it to succeed, because America just has the most outrageous costs for medical care in the world. That's why if you go to a small town anywhere in America, the richest guy in town is more than likely going to be a doctor. And that's why it's become the golden road to riches, because of health insurance. Health insurance allowed doctors and hospitals to charge people more than the people who were getting sick or injured could themselves pay. Back in the old days when I was a child, a lot of health insurance. I remember my parents taking me to Dr. Woolley, the pediatrician, and the real clear, $5 for an office visit, $10 if you got a shot, and whatever it was, your parents would open up their purse or their pocketbook, depending on whether it's your father or your mother, and pay the bill as they left. There was none of this insurance billing, none of this elaborate coding and all of this type of stuff that exists now. But then health insurance became popular, and doctors found they could charge people more than they could afford, and doctors' incomes started to skyrocket. That's what's happened. That's what we're dealing with right now in America. And that's why and basically, Obamacare was designed to fail so that people would throw up their hands and say, government, bail us out. We need single-payer government medical care from here on out. And that's what they wanted, and that's what they were headed towards. That's why you've got all of this disastrous implosion of Obamacare now. And that's what would have happened if Hillary had gotten in. We would be well on our way to single payer. Now, Trump just wants to follow through on a campaign promise, but I don't think he's going to be able to get his hands around this thing the way that, and if Ryan's plan goes through, it will be almost as bad as Obamacare.
We'll be back. Last segment of the night coming your way next.
My sister was smoking, and I watched her. She asked me if I wanted some, and I said, sure. And she taught me how to smoke, and that was my first experience.
Every day, an estimated 3,000 teens start smoking.
Both my parents smoke. I mean, seeing them smoke, watching them, thinking, well, they do it, it's not going to hurt me.
Smoking sends mixed messages to your children.
They just recently found out. I just told my mom, so she was shocked, very shocked.
I think parents have a big influence on whether or not their children smoke. Because even if the parent says that they don't agree with it, it really doesn't hold a lot of water. I mean, you can say, I don't agree with you smoking, but when you light up 5 minutes later, it doesn't hold a lot of water.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Are you familiar with the term vigor, strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example. Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, everybody, last segment of the night. I want to do this right out of the gate before we run out of time. It's one thing I really like to do. It's the only part of the quarterly fundraising drives that I enjoy. Because God knows I hate doing the fundraising. I wish we didn't have to. I'm thankful we only have to do it four times a year, not five or six to stay on the air. We bring enough grain into the storehouse every quarter, so we don't have to do it more often. It'd be nice if we only had to do it once a year or never. But anyway, support has been coming in. We kicked off our first quarter fundraising drive for 2017 10 days ago. So, you know, when we do these quarterly fundraising drives, they only run a month. This time it's in March. We're a third of the way through March, and we still got a lot of ground to cover, but I'm thankful for everyone who's chipped in so far. That includes listeners from Nashville, Tennessee, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Alberta, Canada, Little Rock, Arkansas, Sao Paulo, Brazil, Brazilian cesspool fans, Chino, California, Los Angeles, California, L.A. fans. That's even more surprising than the Brazilian.
La La Land.
Jonesboro, Arkansas, Ocala, Florida, Louisville, Kentucky, New Palestine, Indiana. That's a city. Summerfield, Florida, North Wales, Pennsylvania, Chicago, Illinois, Callahan, Florida, Loudoun, Tennessee, London, England. How about that? The mother country. Memphis, Tennessee, and all around the surrounding areas here where we're based. Rockville, Maryland, Hanceville, Alabama, new donor down there. So it's coming in, more cities. If you want your city to be on the list of acknowledgments that we give each week this month, please donate. Make your city proud by donating to TPC and help us stay on the air. We really do need your help to stay on the air. We're doing a lot. Very proud about the appearance we were able to make at Northwestern this week, and we're always in the news in addition to doing the work.
Let's get James off the Megabus, folks. We got to get him at least a Coach Fair class. Airline ticket
there
next time.
Yeah, that's right, the mega bus. We didn't really go on the mega bus. We're not that poor. But we do need more help to stay on the air because the production costs always go up. Hey, and special incentive this month, this quarter, as always, the truth about Selma, what happened when the cameras left and the marching stopped. You give $100 or more to TPC this month, you're going to get that book autographed by the author Paul Kersey, who will be our guest next week, talking about having a different featured guest every week. Paul Kersey's with us next week to talk about the book. A little more information about the book, though. Every year, elected officials at the federal and state level, along with celebrities, make the pilgrimage to now 80% black Selma, Alabama, to recreate the famed march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Paying homage to the Swindle Whites struggle, this march is highly publicized and promoted by the mainstream media, Hollywood, and public schools to produce maximum volumes of white guilt across America, reminding them that they must forever atone for their ancestors.
And give till it hurts.
And, well, in this book, hence the name, Paul tells you the truth about Selma, what happened when the cameras left and the marching stopped. It is a fascinating read. Yours autographed for $100 or more. But if you can't give $100 to get the incentive, $5, $10, $25, we've been sustained for 13 years on donations just like that.
No wooden nickels, please, but that's about it.
If that's what you got, we'll do what we can with that. Hey, listen, folks, tonight would be great. We do need your help. We've gotten off to a decent start. Good, not great, but we're going to get there before the end of it with your help. So please donate tonight if you can, but certainly before the end of the month at thepoliticalcesspool.org, thepoliticalcesspool.org, safely and securely. You can contribute with your credit card, and a portion of that goes back to the network that makes the show possible, and so your love is spread around. Hey, one more thing about radio. We're proud to announce that our New York correspondent, we're all over the place. Our New York correspondent and good friend Sean Bergen now hosts his own radio show. Sean is the host of Straight to the Point, which is broadcast on WLINY in Long Island, New York. Now, so even though Sean is now anchoring his own program, he's going to continue to be a regular contributor to TPC. But much more than that, some of his early guests on Straight to the Point have included some familiar names, including yours truly, Sam Bushman, Jim Lancia, even Scoop Stanton. Can you believe it? That's Sean, stand-up guy, good guy. And so he's
But I doubt they'll have me on there.
Well, I don't see why not.
Well,
he'll get there.
The reason is this: several weeks ago, I mentioned.
Ah, no. Well, hey, that was a.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding about this. Really. I'm sure Sean is a bigger man than that. But what are we seeing now next to Affordable Care Act repeal and replace? What is the big Fox News Trump news item that's driving the agenda right now? It's bugging and wiretapping, or whatever you want to call it, eavesdropping, electronic eavesdropping at Trump Tower. We were first told that that was totally specious, totally a figment of Donald Trump's imagination. And then, whoops, we see that Obama went to the FISA court. That's Foreign Intelligence Security Act court to try to get a wiretap subpoena issued to put a wiretap or a electronic surveillance, I guess is the new modern term for that. The old term was wiretapping. Now it's electronic surveillance of Trump Tower.
And the reason that it was granted to Sean is when you and Sean were on the air together last month, you said Trump needs to be wary of potential
electronic
wiretapping or whatever. And Sean said, "Hey, what is this? A Bond movie? They don't do that." And then a week later, Trump says, "Hey, I've been yeah, bugged."
And you know the big unasked question is if they have actually electronically surveilled Trump Tower in Manhattan. Can there be any question whatsoever that before he left the White House, Obama made sure that the White House was bugged so that they could could hear everything that was going on in the new Trump White House?
And here's another thing, Keith, this is so much more serious than the whole fake news Russia news story. If Donald Trump has been bugged by the Obama administration, that is so much more heinous and so much more
than Watergate ever was. Watergate was nothing compared to that. They're up here, you know. Obama is staying in Washington D.C. ostensibly until his daughter graduates from high school, but evil tongues report he's basically directing a shadow government and doing that. Well, if he is bugging the White House, which I don't think there's any question that there's electronic surveillance going on in the White House.
Whether it's put there by Obama or it's just it's always been there.
But at any rate, why do you think Trump has been spending so much time at his winter White House in Mar-a-Lago? That may be the one place that they haven't been able to bug yet. And I would recommend that he stay there. He also needs to get out of the poisonous cesspools of Manhattan, where only 18% of the voting population voted for him, his hometown, or D.C., where even less than 18% voted for him. And he's got another big rally scheduled in Red State America, this one in Nashville, Tennessee, coming up.
And he knows where his country is.
He knows where he's been. If he hasn't learned, he's learning basically who his friends are and who they're not. He needs to keep that well in mind, and he needs to understand that the left is playing for keeps. They have a coup d'etat planned, a soft coup d'etat using impeachment. They're following the playbook of the Watergate impeachment to the letter. They took out Nixon's Attorney General John Mitchell basically because they said his wife was a hick from Arkansas. They hounded him out of office. Now they have hounded Jeff Sessions into recusing himself from anything to do with the election. What he needs to do, what Trump needs to do, and what the Sessions Department of Justice needs to do, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, is say, we're not going to just investigate Russia and the Republican election effort. We are going to investigate the entire 2016 election for election fraud of any type, including and especially the Democrats, because I guarantee, I will bet you a dollar to a donut hole, that there is tons of black voter fraud that went on in major urban areas like Philadelphia, New York, Memphis, Tennessee, Los Angeles, California, you name it. There's also, I mean, that's as perennial as the dew. There is going to be electoral fraud in a presidential campaign in Democratic precincts. Let's bring that out. I guarantee you, if they find any improprieties, 90% of the improprieties at a minimum will be on the Democratic side, and 10% or less will be on the Republican side.
And where's all of this intrepid journalism? They've been going out trying to pursue this fake Russia news story where,
narrative,
God forbid, someone in the Obama administration or the transition team talked to a Russian at some point before Trump was in the White House. But they've been going after that with hammer and tongs. The only reporting I've seen about the potential bugs or electronic surveillance is, Trump's crazy. That's basically been all we've got.
Yeah, it's like Charles Krauthammer had an article in today's Commercial Appeal in Memphis saying we need to get over these conspiracy theories. Well, that's exactly what you would expect from somebody like him who is basically a liberal at heart.
That's absolutely right. Well, we're out of time. We'll see you next week, folks. Don't forget, donate, donate, donate. We need your help, folks. God knows.
Get James off the Megabus.
Please contribute to the first quarter fundraising drive at ASAP. We'll see you next week. We love you.